this week's episode of GoGab, Cameron unveils some big news. We talk about what's happening on our farms, as well as visit with our reproductive technologies expert, Stanton Warren, small ruminant program lead for Transova Genetics. Stay tuned and get excited. Good day, everyone listening to Goat Gab here. Cameron Jedlowski back on the podcast for another exciting rendition of Goat Gab.
And this is Laura Warren Hughes, and we are excited to welcome my brother-in-law, Stanton Warren, today.
Good afternoon.
Stanton, so glad to bring you onto the podcast here today. I'm really excited to learn about some of the reproductive technologies that you work with on a daily basis, as well as how they can help advance genetic advancement in the dairy goat industry.
Yes, sir.
Have you had a good week, Cameron?
Yes, Laura, I have actually some exciting news on the personal front. I proposed to my girlfriend this weekend. She said yes, thankfully. And then, so we've been just experiencing a lot of love and support from our friends and family on that as we go through this very exciting time.
Well, congratulations, Cameron and Catherine, and good luck, Catherine. You may need it. I mean that with all kinds of love, guys. I'm really happy for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, but nonetheless, Laura, what's been happening on your farm?
Well, I'll tell you what. It's been a great week. We've had nice weather, though I think it's starting to take a downhill plunge, but my afternoon is going to be spent building fence. I've had an escapee buck, so that's always a fun thing to look at. He's learned how to climb cattle panels. So
that is never fun. Very dangerous for bucks as they get very excited this time of year. But it's a problem that many goat breeders have had to face, including, and we find ourselves always fixing those fences now in this time of year.
Well, today it's kind of funny. We noticed that he has a follower. We have a lone sheep, and she thinks that buck is really nice too. So I'm hoping that we don't have any gleep. I don't know what you would call it. Geep. But it's kind of funny to watch him feeling harassed by our lone sheep instead of him doing the harassing part. So
yes, he is not into her. She's into him.
Yeah.
And Stanton, why don't you kind of introduce yourself and then talk about kind of what's happening on your farm in our segment on the farm?
Well, my name is Stanton Warren, and I grew up here where Laura is. I grew up in Dawn, Missouri. We grew up raising and showing Nubian dairy goats under the Don DeLane herd name here in North Central Missouri. I went to college and then started working for Transova soon out of college. Here in Chillicothe, Missouri. I actually started in the fall of 1996. And then in 2001, I married my wife, Kelly, who is also a local gal. And then we eventually had three boys, Patrick, Eli, and Grant. And we currently raise Oberhosleys and Nigerian dwarfs. We recently sold out of our Bordeaux. We raised boars for quite a few years. And then just kind of cover the country, watching the boys play sports, football and basketball. And in fact, we just came from the beginning of our junior high basketball season. We had a game locally here and just got away from that.
Well, that's really exciting to see that sports are coming back in some areas of the country and the youth have an opportunity to get out and pull and return to play here. So I am much looking forward to that in my home state in Illinois when that is deemed appropriate. But that's awesome that sports are coming back.
It would be a boring place around here. You know, rural Missouri, if you don't have football and basketball, it gets to be kind of a long fall and winter. So
yes. And Stanton, what's kind of happening on your farm this past week here with the Oberhosleys and the Nigerians?
We have not started breeding. I know you guys have talked quite a bit about your breeding programs and what's been going on with your AIs and just live covers and such, but we haven't started breeding. We've been recording heats on, I think everybody's, in fact, even quite a few of the doe kids have cycled, but we're probably going to start breeding on the next set of heat cycles, which should be coming up in the next week or so. So we've been pretty kind of holding off, and probably from a selfish standpoint, I don't want to milk too many goats during the school year. So we're holding off as late as possible. I'm not quite as hardcore show minded as Laura is. And so we're more focused on when we're milking rather than when a senior kid is born or things like that. So just haven't attacked it yet.
Yeah, no, that was always a thing growing up where my dad was a school teacher and then a principal at one point. And then we kind of had to plan when we were going to milk and when we were going to have babies around, what was happening with school as well as what was happening with the kids as well. The two-legged kids, not the four-legged kids. Right. So, yeah, no, that's definitely a concern. And some dairy goat breeders do see that as, you know, that's a big concern.
Well, and it's, you know, over the years, I've learned that to have a good balance of family life and goat life, sometimes you do have to make those compromises. And if you don't, that's when family members start resenting the goats, when they start getting in the way of other things that are just as important, but not on the goat table. So I think good balance.
I agree with you on that, but I will tell you what, the goats, clipping goats, has gotten me out of many family reunions that I maybe did not want to go to.
Nobody wants a hairy Cameron at reunions, no. Then, huh?
No, and I am thankful for that. I do appreciate that side of the family. Very fun, just a little different, and their family reunion was always in July, so that's our generally tends to be our busy time, so.
Totally understand that.
Yeah. So,
anything now, are your... last time when we talked, your lap AIs had passed their waiting period and you were guardedly optimistic. Everybody's still stuck and going on from there.
As of now on my farm, everything is stuck. And we've preg checked everything over 30 days now and everything's stuck. So some of the traditional transcervical AIs have stuck. And then some of the lap AIs have stuck as well. Yesterday, in kind of the excitement of the engagement, Catherine was still a little down because one of her lap AIs came into heat at about 28 days, 6 weeks. At 6 weeks, she came back into heat.
Mm. Oh, bummer.
Yeah. So she was a little down, but I said, you know, would it be a good goat relationship if I didn't feel sympathy on a really happy day for a goat project?
Well, at least you guys have that understanding that you can share.
Yes, absolutely. And dinner, and we went out to drinks beforehand. And, you know, the topic of conversation generally is goats. And I really enjoy that because I can never get enough goats. I mean, we started a goat podcast.
I know. What do you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But that's kind of what happened this week. And then generally, also something I did, which was a little different, was I went ahead and brought up an Excel sheet. And I dug into some of the linear traits that I could find of daughters to see if something would be improved based on those linear traits. And then I sought some feedback from the industry as well.
I saw that on Facebook. Where did you go with that project?
Yeah. So what I did was I would go and pick daughters that had been appraised of a certain buck that we had AI'd a goat to. It really didn't matter. I just see if I wanted to prove a point or not and really, you know, try to trace my hunch. The feedback I got from the industry was it might not have been the best because I was examining qualitative traits instead of quantitative traits. And that might have been a little skewed based on which appraiser and at what stage of lactation those animals were presented and how old they were. But I still was able to go and make an interesting case as we talked about it between myself and my dad.
You know, I wondered if your dad didn't have something to do with that, trying to prove a point or... That's how things around here sometimes go when we have those discussions with my daughters.
Yeah, and generally it was built, that whole spreadsheet was built out of to prove a point to my dad. It was interesting. Would I do it again and would I continue to do that analysis? Yes. Would I use it as 100% of what I should base my genetic decisions on? No.
Very interesting. You'll have to let us know how that works out down the road.
Yes, definitely. And I'll continue to build some more stuff out and whatnot as we continue to develop into this genetics world that the dairy goat industry is providing with all of this information.
Awesome. Shall we jump into our topic today with Stanton?
Yes, absolutely. We're going to be talking about reproductive technologies kind of what the industry has right now, where the industry is going, and where do we see some of the future technologies that can be implemented into your dairy goat herd. So Stanton, why don't you, you know, take it away. We'll just open the floor right away and we can delve into that.
Well, I can probably start the easiest by kind of explaining a little bit of the history of myself along with Transova Genetics.
Yeah.
And that I mentioned, I started in 1996 with Transova in Chillicothe, Missouri, which is a satellite of our headquarters, which headquarters is in Sioux Center, Iowa, which is in the far northwest corner of Iowa. And Chillicothe was one of our first satellites. And so I started in that company with 100% cattle work. And at the time, even in 96, we were basically, the majority of what we were doing was embryo transfer, conventional embryo transfer. And so since that time, I've been involved with that from a recip herdsman, a donor herdsman, and a customer service standpoint.
And
then also not only customer service, but also just general coordination of and scheduling of what was going on within our satellite. Go ahead,
Cameron. When you say recip herdsman, could you kind of define some of those terms there?
So we house recipients and sell recipients to clients in the cattle side of things. And we get them recips or cows pregnant with a client's embryos and then sell them a pregnant recipient at about 70 days pregnant. And that is another word for a recipient that a lot of people might understand is surrogate.
Okay.
And so we sell those pregnancies or those cows to clients and have for a very long time. To those clients, and then they calve them out. It's their cow and it's their calf, obviously. A donor herdsman, donors are the elite animals, the animals that you're trying to replicate. And those are, you know, I started out as a donor herdsman. Actually, I started as a recip herdsman and kind of moved into donor management there on the farm there at Chillicothe, and then kind of gradually worked into customer service work.
Okay. Yeah. Great.
Well, that work, you know, that from 96 till 2015, and I'm still involved in the cattle side of things in Missouri. And in 2015, we were, our satellite as a group kind of brought forth the idea of doing small ruminant work to the leaders of Transova. And they allowed us to start that process by hiring a veterinarian, specifically hired to be the small ruminant veterinarian. And so he started the small ruminant program with Transova in 2015 in the fall, basically with training and getting that veterinarian trained up and going in the whole process, learning the processes and doing them well. And then in 2016 started doing work for clients in the small ruminant industry. And since that time, we've progressed. We started right away doing lap AIs, surgical flushing, and then, you know, and obviously embryo transfers as well. And in the beginning, we also started with in vitro fertilization, and that process has just taken more time to perfect and develop. And then we now offer in vitro fertilization for goats in our toolbox.
So Stanton, I'm not an animal science major, and I'm not necessarily well versed in all terms reproduction. And this may be a really basic, dumb question, but could you explain to me the difference between embryo transfer and IVF?
Okay. When I talk about embryo transfer, in vivo fertilization is in the body, and in vitro fertilization is outside of the body or in a laboratory. And so an ET flush or surgical flush on a doe is where you have her ovulate, super ovulate, and she ovulates all of her own eggs into her own body, and you fertilize those eggs in her body and then flush them out of her.
So she could have 10, 15 fertilized eggs inside her body at that time before you flush her.
Yes, hopefully.
Okay.
Around a dozen 8 to 12 is about a good flush, and that is a surgical procedure where they make an incision on her midline, right in between her umbilical area and her foreudder, and about a 4-inch incision. They expose the uterus during the procedure and flush those embryos out of her body at about 7 days old. And so then those embryos, go ahead.
Oh, Cameron. And that's after fertilization, correct? So you've already, so the goat's already been fertilized after, you know, super ovulating, and you're just bringing them out, correct?
Correct. And so those embryos then can be transferred fresh or be frozen for later use, just like similar to freezing semen and keeping it in nitrogen and being able to thaw it whenever you want to thaw them and use at a later date. And they're just like semen, where they will stay as long as you store them properly and correctly. They can live for an indefinite amount of time in nitrogen.
So then IVF, you are not fertilizing it inside the goat. You're taking the eggs from the goat and fertilizing them in a laboratory.
Yes. So with IVF, we are going into the dough laparoscopically. We don't make any incisions on an IVF dough. And we go in laparoscopically and aspirate those follicles off of her ovaries. And those follicles will have oocytes or eggs in them. And we harvest as many eggs as we can or oocytes on that particular day, and then fertilize them in a dish the next day. And then we mature those in the incubators in the lab. And then 7 days after we aspirate the donor, we transfer those embryos fresh or freeze them. And they're just like an ET embryo, where we can freeze them and store them indefinitely. There's a lot more that could be explained. And, you know, hopefully maybe we can get into some of those things. But those are the two big ways of making babies from a donor female.
So do you do more IVF with goats, or do you do more embryo transfer work, or is it kind of equal?
As an industry, there's far more goats that are flushed or conventional ET. And that's probably because, and you know, when I talk industry, I'm talking about boar goats, full blood boar goats, Kikos, dairy goats. There's a lot more conventional flushing happening in our country than IVF. IVF is really quite new to our small ruminant industry, and where it's been going on since early 2010s. You know, we've been doing IVF in cattle since back in early 90s, but as far as really successful competitive IVF work in cattle, that started in around 2010, you know, as far as gearing it up and really having good results. As far as the goat industry, IVF is fairly new in terms of probably more like, I don't think we offered it until April of 2018 for goat people. Now, so there's a lot more flushing happening in the country than IVF, as it's fairly new.
Very interesting. Yeah. And lap AI versus transcervical AI. You know, it seems to me, just in talking with dairy goat breeders, there's a lot more transcervical AI that's done, just because, you know, I can run out and do that in my barn. Why would somebody consider doing lap AI instead of transcervical, and what kind of success rates can you expect with that?
So you ask, what's the benefit of a lap AI compared to a speculum AI?
Right.
We can go into a farm, and I mean, I know this isn't something probably in the dairy goat industry other than large dairies, but that can be beneficial. But we can go in there and do 100 to 200 lap AIs in a day. And I think because it's a laparoscopic procedure, it's all about time. It's on a kind of a timed AI process. You can run them through and do lots and lots of does in a day. I don't know how many speculum AIs you could do in a day. And so just the process of how many you can run through is an advantage to a lap AI. And I think back, you know, I've mentioned the full blood industry for boar goats compared to, say, a dairy goat industry. And dairy goats, as you all know, have been doing speculum AI, transcervical AI, for years and years and years, and back when I was a kid. And the dairy goat industry has definitely embraced AI from that standpoint. The boar goat, the full blood market, and even the weather type market, they embraced embryo transfer as compared to AI. Now, the sheep industry is probably where the majority of laparoscopic AIs are performed.
Is it true that you can't, transcervically AI a sheep, correct?
Correct. I mean, there's a new, I can't even think of the name of it, but RamGo, I think. But there's a, and I'm not going to come up with the right words, but there's an anatomical piece of something that covers the cervix on a sheep that makes it so you can't get into the cervix. And I can't think of the name. Levi Campbell could think of the name right now, but that prevents you from getting in like a transcervical, like we're used to with goats. And so the sheep industry has definitely embraced laparoscopic AI because of that. And then also they will, instead of using frozen semen, they'll get a ram and jump the ram, use fresh semen and cover 25 ewes with one jump in that day. And so that's another thing, or have a fresh ejaculate flown in or shipped in via UPS overnight from three or four states away. And so you can do that in sheep, and you can do that in goats if you wanted to, but that's where the sheep industry is really taken on to lap AIs. And so you ask a little bit then, Laura, about what's the success rate. I would say with frozen semen, you're looking at about 50%. With fresh semen, I would say you can bump that number up to 60, maybe 70%. And with any of this, there are so many factors involved in all of this success, or the end product success. But, you know, everything works out and aligns right and does well, and you've got an 80%. But I think that, you know, 50% with frozen semen is something to be happy with.
Yeah, I definitely think there's an industry standard when it comes to that, and everyone's a little bit different, because just how animals, and this is what I've noticed from our lap AIs versus our transcervical AIs, is it's just every goat is different when it comes to their timing, when it comes to their mucus level inside when you're doing transcervical. And because of that variance, I think that 50% number is really respectable for the entire industry.
And something I would add to that, not only that it's timed AI, the difference in a laparoscopic AI is that you are depositing semen in the uterine horn. You're going directly into the uterine horn, where with speculum AI, we're either depositing in the cervix or just past the cervix. And so your semen doesn't have to travel as far with a laparoscopic AI.
Yeah, great point there. One question I do have, and I'm looking over these procedures, lap AIs, there's surgical flushes, there's IVF. Some goat breeders are concerned about kind of the invasiveness of this. Could you talk about the invasiveness of it and kind of what the procedures entail for the animal, if there's any cutting or any lacerations that need to be made?
So with the laparoscopic AI, there would not be any cutting or incisions. Anything laparoscopic has basically a puncture. And so when you are done with the process and all of the animals are under anesthesia during the process, and so they're mostly knocked out and they are actually put on a cradle. I should mention that, because it's something that with everything we do, whether we're talking lap AI or a flush or a aspiration for IVF, all these goats and sheep are knocked out and turned over and laid on a cradle on their back. So back to the different procedures and what they involve physically with the animal, a laparoscopic AI or a laparoscopic OPU, which is what we do for IVF. An OPU is ovum pickup. I'll call it an OPU or an aspiration when I talk about it. And those are just punctures. Those are not any incisions. And so those punctures, we really just super glue those closed, unless you've got a little problem and they may put a little stitch in them. But those are very uninvasive, and that little you know, a little bit of glue and they're fine. And so those recoveries and healing on those are generally quite easy and quite nice. When they transfer an embryo in a recipient, that's mostly laparoscopic, but they do make a little bit of an incision on the belly, and that's maybe a half an inch or less than a half an inch. And just so they can exteriorize that little portion of the uterine horn that they need to put the embryo in or embryos in. And so that takes a stitch or two. That's pretty simple. Now a surgical flush for conventional embryo transfer is about, like I mentioned earlier, it's about a 4 or 5 inch incision on her midline. And that's a full blown surgery, and recovery takes a little longer. And then obviously you run the risk of potential adhesions and situations like that with a conventional flush.
Great. One question I did have, and it seems like the board goat industry, like you talked about, has embraced embryo transfer. Well, the dairy goat industry has kind of embraced transcervical AI. Have you seen any problems? And this is an experience that I've had, and both my fiance and I have seen, is hitting the milk vein when they're looking in that laparoscopic procedure or making those really small incisions. Have you seen that in dairy goats when either laparoscopic eyeing them or doing some ET work?
I don't know that I would, and I'm not a veterinarian to speak the actual proper internal terminology, but I know that there's times when they will hit a blood spot or vein. I don't know that I would call that a milk vein. Those are generally pretty visible to them, and they're, in fact, they are pretty cautious about those, the bigger milk veins, whenever they're going in for a procedure. But, you know, there are times when we've hit a vein enough that they do have to go ahead and stitch things up. Now, when you're doing a flush, a conventional flush with the bigger incision, they're generally not hitting veins too badly and that kind of a thing. But there's times when they hit a spot or get a lot of blood, and they just generally just suture that up, and it's generally a pretty good heal. But there are times when that healing might involve a hematoma and get a little bit of swelling there, and that's just something to be cautious about.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point that we do want to mention here. Stanton's not a veterinarian, and he's not a reproductive physiologist. So we're trying to stay away from some of those veterinary things that might come up. Stanton, would you agree with that?
Yes, I know enough to be dangerous, but I try to stay in my lane.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I'm experiencing on my farm, usually buck falls in love with doe falls in love with buck. It all happens pretty easily, sometimes easier than you want it to. Why or when should a dairy goat breeder consider using a reproductive specialist or some of these other technology things? You know, sell that. Why would I want to consider that?
So as far as the different services that Transova offers?
Yeah, sure. That's a great example.
So I think a laparoscopic AI with a dairy goat producer could be, I often think we've never done this to any degree, but I often think that people are always nervous about AIing doe kids as far as a speculum AI. But definitely a laparoscopic AI would be an advantage to that, because you're not worrying about whether you can get into the cervix or different things like that. And so that would be something as far as laparoscopically, where the dairy goat industry could use that technology. Nervousness of high dollar semen or rare semen that you want to make sure that goes in the uterus and you don't want to mess with worrying about getting through the cervix. So you just bypass that and go to a lap AI. Big groups of, I think of dairies, dairy goat dairies are certainly on the increase in our country. And I think that they definitely have an opportunity to use something like lap AI, where you can go somewhere and AI 100 to 200 does in a day. I mean, that's mass breeding and getting a lot of does bred in a short amount of time to kid in a short amount of time on a timed AI.
So if I have a doe, Stanton, that, and I think all of us that AI have these does, they just seem to be not good candidates for transcervical. It's hard to tell when they're in heat, or they have a really short heat window, or for whatever reason, you've just not been able to catch them to do a traditional transcervical AI. Would those be a better candidate for a lap AI then?
Well, it just takes, I don't know that they would be more successful in getting pregnant AI, but if you had trouble with their cervix or the timing, or you may be able to get more does bred that are that kind of a problem.
I see.
Or that you're having problems with on another, from another situation. That would be my only thought, would be just bypassing the worry of that cervix. Okay. And going straight to the uterus.
Yeah.
Very
yes,
good.
Yes, yes. Go ahead, Laura.
So what other considerations should breeders think about when they're considering if they want to go that next step down the road of reproductive technology?
I think that anytime you have a female that is superior to the rest of the herd, and that you know that you can make as many babies as possible out of that doe and either sell them, or that you want to bring them back into the herd. I mean, any doe that's proven that you could, that more babies from her are an advantage to your program. And so then you start weighing out the pros and cons of flushing or IVF, and whether that's whether you're looking at worrying about the surgical process, then you go to IVF, where it's all laparoscopic. You have the buck that you want to breed or two, and he's it at your farm or down the road at somebody else's farm, and you're okay with flushing, you may go to a conventional flush. If you have frozen semen, that is, you know, I've been dealing with some of these lately that there are 4 units known in the country on a given buck. That is definitely where you would take that semen and utilize it in IVF.
So, Stan, I have a goat that has a lot of reproductive value to me. She's a little older. She hasn't been bred in a year now. She's got some arthritis issues, and we don't know if she's going to get bred because we don't know if she's in the best condition. What would you recommend for me if I wanted to do some type of reproductive technologies program?
I would probably encourage you to go the IVF route, because we found that older does, and when I talk older does in the dairy industry, I'm talking about a 8, 9, 10-year-old doe. We've noticed that they have performed very similarly to their, you know, 2, 3, 4-year-old counterparts, where with conventional flushing, you don't see that kind of success with those older does.
Okay.
And so I definitely encourage you to look at the IVF route.
So if I were to go to the IVF route, and I just want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly, I would need to bring donors, correct, for that, or recips?
Recips. You would set your donor up. We would aspirate her on a given day. At that same time, you've synchronized your recipients to be in heat during that same time period when you're doing the aspiration on the donor. And then a week later, we would implant embryos into your recipients.
Okay. And then do you have 4 recipients? Generally, I hear from a lot of boar guys that dairy goats are the best. Do you have a preference on whether it's kids as recipients or those that have maybe already freshened? What do you think makes the best recipient for an IVF or an embryo transfer?
I think what I'm probably finding, and I don't know that everybody has this opportunity, but dry yearlings or coming yearlings seem to be a very good group to be working with from a dairy recipient standpoint. But certainly anything that's open, anything that has a good healthy uterus, and an animal that you're not worried about having a kidding problem. And then for dairy goats, obviously we're raising them, we're bottle raising them or hand raising them. And so you're not so worried about whether that recipient can do a good job raising her babies, because she's probably going to be hand milked. And so you know, that's something that is different than the boar goat industry where the recips are raising the babies.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's an idea that myself and my fiance have tossed around here and doing, and we definitely have a candidate for that, as I kind of mentioned there. But I know Laura, and I guess this is a dairy goat consideration here, Laura, and you might have some considerations about this too, is what like type of value like those kids provide, those does provide as dry yearlings or as older, younger stock, not reaching 1 year old yet, and them having kids. So Laura, is that ever a concern for you as you want to freshen and see kids out of a first freshener doe?
I have a dry yearling that I really am eager to see how she freshens. She toes out, and I'm kind of a fanatic about toe out in alpine. I don't like it. And I don't have it in my herd, but she does. So in my way of thinking, she'd be a great one to use to incubate, to grow an embryo, because that way I can see what she looks like when she freshens. But I'm not going to be tempted to keep those kids knowing that she toes out. So I wouldn't have any problems doing that. And I've got some kids that I've thought about too. Huh, wonder if I could make her into a recipient if I, you know, wanted to do that. So
I had a coworker years ago bring this idea to light, and I've shared it with a fair number of people over the years, and most people kind of look at me like, no, you're wrong. But if you look at your herd and you have, let's say you have 20 does, and two of those does are linear praised at 90 or above, and they milked 3,500 pounds in 305 days, and both of them did that, and they are far superior to everything else in your herd. Those does are your donor does, and in reality, the rest of your 18 does can be recipients, because if they're not better than those two does, then they could very easily and logically carry embryos from those two does. But everybody has I know that everybody, however, has a plan for, I want to bring this doe to this buck because it's going to give me this, or if she's out of this doe and I really want her to be bred to this buck, you know, that everybody has a plan for the breeding program in each individual doe. But in hardcore reality, there's better does, and those are your donors. And if they're not, if your other does aren't better than them, they could be recipients.
That's an interesting thought.
Yes. And it goes against a lot of what, you know, me as a breeder and wanted to make some type of progress on each doe, you know, seeing, okay, what traits can I put together in this buck for this doe in order to see some type of progress. But I agree with it from a philosophy standpoint. And I definitely see the value as a goat breeder for that.
Is there a time that you would say that goat is just too old? We're not, this is not a good candidate.
With IVF, I would say less. I would say fewer times no. The one thing that I want that people should always keep in mind is that if a doe is old and has some type of health issue, or say even a structure issue, like she's one-legged and or going bad on one leg, and so she's laying around all the time, or she's, you know, whatever reason might have a problem going on with her, then she's not a good candidate. But if she's still healthy and still eating well and is mobile and gets around fine and is part of the herd, she's a candidate for IVF. And that's something that I would definitely like to bring up, is the idea of something that we don't like to talk about, and that is a terminal and doing a process with IVF where the doe would be put down and we would take the ovaries out of her body and then process those ovaries and get as many oocytes as we can from her ovaries and hopefully make, you know, a good number of babies from those oocytes.
Yeah.
And that's something that isn't a pleasant conversation to have with people, but it's a very real possibility and something that I would definitely like to educate our industry about is that opportunity.
So say I have a goat that passes away. How fast would that process need to be started? Would we need to be thinking about it before the animal dies? Because this is something I've seriously considered when one of my animals would pass away, in addition to my fiance whispering in my ear about this as well. When do we need to start that process? And when do we need to start thinking about it?
The whole process needs to happen. The thought process needs to happen before she starts going downhill. So it's something that, if you go out there tonight, Cameron, and you've got a doe that passed away, it's done. We can't do anything other than cloning. We can't do anything at that point with that doe or buck reproductive.
Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say that. Bucks you could posthumously yes. collect.
But yes, and do you have experience with that? I hate to, we're going down a rabbit hole, but I think it's a good rabbit hole.
I do, just from the standpoint of knowing it was done, mainly with bulls. And I know we've done some work recently with buck semen in IVF that worked. And then I know they've done that with sheep semen as well. And they do it with deer all the time. But that's definitely a possibility from the male stock side of everything. From a female standpoint, from a doe standpoint, you need to do the whole process before she starts going downhill, because I know that from lots of experience that if she's stopped eating or just stopped moving around and then you try to do it, your results are just not going to be where you want them to be. And so I really encourage people to do that when they're still healthy, just old, but healthy.
Okay. And so that would involve obviously putting the animal down then, I'm assuming. Again, kind of a hard topic to talk about, but I think it's a question that's valid.
It can be a difficult topic, obviously. I've had lots of people talk to me lately about it, and I do think that there's the possibility of surgically removing a doe's ovaries and not putting her down. It just would be a much longer process to get those ovaries out, and then a longer recovery on the doe. Well, you're not going to recover from death, but if she did a surgery to remove the ovaries, you could keep that doe around and that way have her still around in the herd and on the farm and then still be able to get something out of her reproductively, babies out of her somehow.
Yes.
So that's a possibility, but yes, for the terminal IVF, you're putting them down and removing the ovaries, and that those ovaries need to be out of the doe very soon after she is deceased. It's not anything you can find her dead and then take her ovaries out 2 hours.
So from a purely a process standpoint here, would we need to call you at Transova Genetics and say, hey, I have this doe. She's going to be passing away. And we think in the next couple of weeks, I want to take these ovaries out and get, some valuable oocytes. And correct me if I'm wrong throughout this whole thing, do we need to let you know about this, a week in advance or 3 days or how fast do we need to make this process go with the genetics company we're working with?
So I would say if you could give somebody a couple of weeks, that would be ideal. But I've literally worked on things like this within a day. And so there are times when there's a lot to talk about on this topic, Cameron, but let's say you go out there and a doe that's perfectly healthy just broke her leg, and it's not something you're going to, and a goat, you're going to work on a goat's leg, but a 1800 pound cow, you maybe not going to work on her leg, but that's something that it can happen fairly quickly. Her ovaries need to be within, sometimes we'll say 6 hours. I prefer 2 or 3 hours. But those ovaries need to be within 2 or 3 hours of somebody to process them. And so that's what takes the time, and that's what needs to be planning, or that's what needs to be planned out.
And is
the one thing that I will add to what you said is, if you think she's going to die in 2 weeks, Cameron, I don't want to do this process. This is a thing where you've got a 8-year-old doe that hasn't bred in 2 years. And you know that she just isn't going to have any more babies. and she's healthy. That's the doe we need to work with, not the one that you think's going downhill fast. Those are not going to result in the kind of results that you want.
And is there a procedure that like farmers and breeders can do, or is this a procedure they need to have a vet come out and do? I was just having this conversation with my fiance yesterday.
I think there are probably individuals around the country that could do their own work, but I think in general, you probably would want a vet to do something like that. But some people could, you know, there's people that are trained in different situations. Like my niece could probably take ovaries out of a goat because she would know where to find them because of her work knowledge. But, you know, it's going to be a veterinarian.
Okay. That's great information there.
Cameron, we had one of our followers pose a question for Stanton. Do you want to share that with him?
Yes, and kind of see what absolutely. Here, this is from G from Minnesota. So he's got an Alpine dry yearling. He did not get her bred last year, and he tried to AI her last year. Thought she was, you know, settled, really good transcervical AI her, and it seemed quote unquote normal inside when we got her to the hood. She didn't stick her first breeding this year as an Alpine dry yearling. And he thought she was coming into heat, you know, when he submitted this question here. However, she does have a smaller vulva than normal here. This person is trying to decide if she would maybe be a good candidate for lap outs AI, if the issue is outside of the uterine horn, or if this animal might potentially be have some type of other issue.
I would. So he's AI'd her, so he knows that he can get to the cervix through her vagina. So that would be the one thing. You know, he said a small vulva. I would definitely be concerned about a hermaphrodite. But, you know, I think that ideally, I think you get into something like a coming two-year-old, that animal needs to be bred. She needs to see a live buck. And that's just... I feel like Dr. Laura here in terms of talking about that, but I think that animal needs to see a live buck. If a live cover and fresh semen can't do the trick, that's something that she needs to have a baby and then start worrying about maybe being able to AI her later on. Another option would be trying to put an embryo in her. And that would just be from my years of getting cattle donors pregnant is, you know, if you can't get them pregnant with a bull or you can't get them pregnant with an embryo or with an AI, you go to an embryo. And so then she becomes a recipient.
Okay. I think that's solid advice there. Laura, I guess anything to add without actually seeing the animal and not and just having some years of goat experience along with Stanton?
Yeah, I would say the same thing. I think sometimes you have those kids that you just know is going to be that future national champion, and you look at them and you think, but I've got to make this AI breeding. And I think that's understandable, but you know, gosh, if she's not going to stick with a live breeding, do you really want to put that time and money and effort into getting her settled with a lap AI? And this would be another question that I would have, and maybe we could chew on this a little bit. Animals that have breeding or reproductive problems, we know that that's a hereditary trait. So, you know, do you really want to put that much money into the first breeding on an animal that might have that trait that passes on?
Yeah, that's a great consideration there to have when it comes to that. And from my experiences, generally some of the prettiest kids in the pen that we've had, may have been hermaphrodites. Just last year, actually, one of our nicest kids we had, when we could catch her and show her, we actually thought she was a hermaphrodite to start her life because she just looked so much bigger and she had such a more of a buckier head as a younger doe.
Did you get her bred, Cameron?
She did. She freshened nice. Was really one of our hot Alpine yearling milkers we had, and then she sadly passed away unexpectedly. Sometimes you can just tell, other times you just kind of got to wait it out when it comes to finding out if a goat is a hermaphrodite or not.
So I have another question for Stanton. Those of us that listened to our podcast a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned that there was a lot of discussion about cloning at the recent board of directors meeting. What can you tell us about cloning, or what do you want to tell us about cloning? Is that a viable way to increase your herd, and how's that working?
You can definitely clone goats. Transova does clone goats, and we do have plenty of clone babies across the country, whether those be females or bucks. And by saying bucks, that reminded me of something that's been very popular from a boar goat or weather goat process, is taking a sample of a weather and then making a buck for breeding purposes from that top end weather.
That's so something. So let me see if I get this right. You're saying like a goat weather that is, let's say, wins the Ohio State Fair and is just the hot weather for the year, taking a cell line from him and cloning him with the purpose of making a buck that will throw weathers that look like him.
Correct. So that's something, obviously, in the dairy goat market, it's not something we would necessarily talk about, but those are the opportunities with the cloning technology.
Interesting.
Being able to make a buck from a weather.
So there have been lots of successful clones in the dairy cattle industry. Apple comes to mind. Lots of Apple clones have been very successful in the show ring. And I think one of my very favorite pictures was a picture of Apple and then either one or two of her clones who all won their classes at Madison, yeah, I think, at the World Dairy Expo. Do you see that happening with goats?
It could. It probably part of that whole process. So, and I know this is a sticker shock figure to throw out there, but an initial animal, cloned animal at this point in time is going to be around $13,000. And so to make that baby, you have to have the potential market to cover that expense. And so, you know, that is possible in the full blood market for sure. The weather market, the Kiko market, those markets have $10,000 to $20,000 animals. The dairy goat market does have that on occasion at spotlight sales.
Hi, Nigerian goat breeders.
Well, I was gonna say La Mancha.
So there is that possibility.
Oh, La Mancha's, yes, La Mancha's too. There we go.
So that's you've got to have the justification of spending that kind of money. But we've had the privilege of working with a cattle client that has not only done cloning on the male side of things with bulls, but he also has cloned a lot of females. And those have been, it's been very interesting to work with that from a reproductive standpoint, not just a reproductive standpoint, but a genetic standpoint of, you know, those females or those donors may be able to make $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $60,000 heifers. And if that donor makes that kind of a quality animal every time, you can reproduce her through cloning technology, line up literally five or six donors with on a given day in IVF, aspirate them, reverse sort their semen, and produce heifers all out of the same bull, or five different bulls because you've got five different donors, or you know, that then come through and they mostly have heifers and they're $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 heifers. I mean, that is a possibility with cloning, where you look at having that one animal do that, you're going to make one. Well, you're going to make more than one, but you're going to make, let's say, six heifers that year, that season, or 10 heifers that season out of that one, as opposed to 50.
Yeah. Wow.
And so where
it's mind-blowing.
Where it works is those females that I keep saying female, but I'm talking cows in this case. But every time she's got that top end heifer or that top end steer, or, you know that she's going to do that. I think of your doe Fiction. You know, she always, her daughters were repeats. You know, she just threw them out and had every doe that she made was a good doe. And that if you had five of her to make 50 kids every year, you know, that's just where it can come into play. Obviously it costs money. Obviously it has to make a profit and a reasonable return to be able to spend that. But that's the out there thinking about something like that.
That is,
and Stan, excuse if I, this might be a stupid question, but I'm going to ask, can you pick the sex of what you are cloning? So if I want to clone a buck, for example, can I choose it to be a buck, or is it just like luck of the draw, like it is with kidding?
No, it is. When you're cloning, you are, think of a, if you think, the easiest way to put it in your head, Cameron, I think, is to think about identical twins and in people. They are, those identical twins are genetically identical as well. They don't just look alike. They're not just phenotypically identical. They are genetically identical. They are clones, natural clones. And so if you are cloning a buck or a doe, you have that, you are only, if you clone a buck, you're only going to get a buck, because the sex of that buck is genetics.
It's genetic. Part of that genetic code. Yep.
Blueprint. Right. Okay.
So you are just copying that. And along with everything else in its DNA, you are copying that sex.
So will a clone be marked just like what it's made, like its parent? I don't know. That's not the word.
That leads into a good conversation you didn't even know you were leading into, Laura.
Oh, good.
But the they will be similar colored. So if you have, they explain it more so like with a Holstein. If that Holstein has on its legs, has 40% white on its legs, the clones will have approximately 40% white. It may not be in the exact same spot on the legs, but it will be about that same amount. And so they're very similar in color, but not identical.
So what if I have an Oberhausley that I cloned?
It would be...
Would it come Oberhausley color because that's part of the breed? Or is there a chance that it could have a horrible white belt or a white star on its head or something like that?
No, I would say if they're... Let's say she has a white dot on her chest.
Uh-huh.
That clone is probably going to have a white dot on her chest somewhere.
Okay.
But it's not going to... It's going to be... And it might... She may even be the same shade of bay. Okay. You know, or red, or
interesting,
but they're going to be similar. And the interesting part of this is that, like I said, we have a client that we've worked with that really takes advantage of cloning technology in cattle. And he had five or six clones of the same donor at Transova. And I had my son Grant with me doing shots one night, and we had, all these clones are on the same day because they're going to the same bull for shots and aspirations. And they were all lined up. And Grant said, are these all sisters? Because they not only are the same structure, they're the same big, strong donor with the same general color. I mean, they're very similar. I mean, you can tell that they're, like he said, for him, it was sisters. For my knowledge, they're identical, and they do look very similar. That's those apples look very similar.
Yeah.
Even with different management, they're going to look very similar.
Yeah, very definitely. One thing I did want to talk about here was reverse sorting, and you had kind of mentioned some of the successes in cattle when we talked earlier here, but I know you wanted to touch on it for the future of Transova genetics and what that could offer the small ruminant world. So what is reverse sorting?
So reverse sorting is a phrase that Transova coined, and taking a conventionally frozen unit of semen of any age, as long as it's been taken care of properly and is originally was good quality, you can take semen from, in this case, where we've done it with cattle for years, is taking conventionally frozen semen, thawing that semen, running it through a sorting machine, which don't ask me about that technology. I can't explain that to you well enough. And then sorting for the sex of sperm that you want. So if you want heifers or bulls, then you sort out heifer sperm and then fertilize those eggs, those oocytes, with that sperm. And then you're going to have, the accuracy is not 100%. It's about 90 to 95% with females and 85 to 90% with males. But you're going to have mostly the sex that you want on the calves that are coming out. Now we're, as I mentioned, the whole IVF process is very new to the goat industry in terms of commercially available IVF. That technology, you know, we're still using conventional semen, unsorted semen in goat IVF, but we, in the near future, hope to have reverse sorted semen or sex sorted semen available for goat breeders to be able to use that technology in goat
and
IVF.
So is that I have a question ahead, on the Cameron, process sorry. I guess and so would that be semen exclusively sold through Transova Genetics, or could I bring semen up to either the location in Chillicothe or Sioux City and get my semen and sexed before I, you know, AI a goat?
Yes, you can. You can sort goat semen and freeze the semen. We haven't done that. I know that a company in the United States has done that, and that's another option, is using sexed frozen semen. That's a terminology I would use for that, is a fresh ejaculate, sorted, and then frozen. And I'd call that sex frozen. You could use sex frozen semen in IVF, I would assume. I haven't been involved in any of it, but I would assume you could use sex frozen semen in conventional speculum AI or laparoscopic AI. And then you can, you know, in talking about using reverse sorted semen, you can, we will use whatever semen you have frozen. It doesn't matter if it was associated with Transova or made by Zia Capri back in the early 80s. You know, it can be sorted. That's the beauty of reverse sorting, is that you can sort any semen that is frozen. Now, I shouldn't say any. There's going to be some that isn't good enough quality. There's some that isn't physically going to sort, in that we cannot pull the does from the box sperm and can't physically get it to separate enough to be able to sort it. So I can't say that 100% of the time we'll be able to sort your semen, but that a majority will be sortable.
Is that cool or what? I mean, that's, you know, to think that you could potentially make a breeding that you're 90% sure is going to be doe kids. Wow. That's
yeah.
Awesome.
I think about it on the downside though, is what if it doesn't happen and you built it up to be all excited and then you're kind of disappointed with it. And I know I have some friends that have used some sex semen in the dairy cattle industry, and then they sent me a Snapchat and it's, oh man, I used sex semen and it's a bull calf. And you're just like, wow, that's really disappointing. And I'm sorry that you invested in this semen and whatnot. But it is an exciting time in the industry when we look at the possibilities of it.
And yeah, I mean, you mentioned that, yes, you've built up the excitement to have that sex semen and then have a bull. But in all honesty, Cameron, that's not any different than the doe that you lap AI'd and 28 days later came into heat. That's still a disappointment. There's still the excitement of doing anything different or new or fun and then having a bad result. I've definitely dealt with the situations where there's not as many heifer calves as there should have been, or too many bull calves, and it's a disappointment, but we hopefully handle that
and that's
move forward.
Or you could say that's what makes breeding livestock new and exciting all the time, because, you know, if it were a sure thing every time, what would the fun be in that?
Yeah, no, I agree. But that's the risk we all take in trying new things and in, you know, using this technology. But all in all, the repro technology that you've talked about, Stanton, has been awesome. And it's definitely going to be progressing the dairy goat industry forward. Do you have anything else to talk to us about, Stanton, here?
I would yeah. like to talk about, because we kind of, we yeah. got away from it when I had to go yeah. get a drink of water. You know, coming back mm-hmm. to IVF and where would you want to use IVF? Where would you want to use conventional flushing? I'll tell people all day long, you're going to more than likely get the most embryos out of a conventional flush with a live cover. And that's where you're going to get the most embryos at this point in time, and you're going to get the best preg rate from those embryos. But when you have to also take into consideration in that situation that you've got to generally have the live cover. I have been hearing of some positive results with speculum AI in those situations. And then obviously where you could ship in a fresh ejaculate and maybe do some splash AI with a doe. But you've got to remember that's a surgery and you generally need to use fresh semen, but I don't think that's a have to situation. Where IVF comes into play and a good positive initially is that laparoscopic work and no incisions. I'm not going to say we're never going to have adhesions with IVF, but there are less adhesions and less complications with IVF than a conventional flush. And then where you can really work into some advantages are using that rare semen that you only have one unit of, and or you know there's only 10 units in the country. And so there's the opportunity to use that rare semen. And when I'm talking the opportunity, I'm talking about using one unit of semen on 4 to 6 does. And we can spread in IVF, we can spread that one unit over so many oocytes and so many does that becomes pretty important in utilizing that rare semen. And I know I'm throwing extra stuff out here, but you know, we've seen with cattle semen that people have a $15,000 unit of a bull and they will sell slots in IVF to people to be able to go on a given day and fertilize to that semen. And they'll sell, say, 10 slots to that for that one unit of semen and make a big return on their money. And so that could even be done in the goat world with rare semen, expensive semen, semen that people that's in high demand, but there's not a lot of. And so that's something to keep in mind with IVF and the advantages of being able to use frozen semen and limited semen.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of what the Spotlight Sale Committee has been doing with, you know, potentially putting embryos in the Spotlight Sale and seeing it that, and that's a great, you know, consideration to have if you're on the Spotlight Sale Committee and listening to the podcast and kind of seeing how that could be worked in a potential genetic opportunity for interested buyers.
And it could not only be embryos, but, you know, I'm talking about auctioning those slots off, mm-hmm. you know, that you were going to offer you the chance to have your doe aspirated and use this one portion, a small portion of that unit of semen. And that's something else that this is longer term thinking, but with those $15,000 units of bull semen that we've had, we literally had cows being aspirated in Maryland and in Texas and in California and in Ohio. They all have to end up at one lab to be fertilized because that one unit of semen mm-hmm. is at that lab. But you can literally do does across the country on the same day during the same time period and get them all fertilized to that same unit.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect segue into my next question for you, Stanton, is if I want to participate in, you know, any of these programs, do I have to come to a Transova Genetics facility, like in Chillicothe, Sioux City? I know there's one in the Tri-Cities in Washington. I know there's one in Maryland. Do I have to go to a facility, or will you guys come out to my farm and do this?
Depends on the process and, you know, what part you are doing. Laparoscopic AI, we can pretty much, I guess we could say we could come to your farm for whatever portion we do. Thank you. Whether it's lap AI, conventional flush, or an IVF, or just transfers. It can all be done on your farm. It can all be done at a certain location. You can group up people at your farm. So say people that are 2 hours from you, you could all come to your farm and we could come there and do the work. It just has to be coordinated so that we can have the right people where they need to be.
And so if I want to do an IVF or an embryo transfer and even a laparoscopic AI, how soon, if I want to do this for 2021, how soon do I need to be talking with the folks at my genetics company or Transova Genetics to start coordinating this?
I would say for lap AIs, that's a quicker schedule and a quicker process. You know, I would say maybe a month in advance. With a IVF or an ET, I would sure try to get 2 or 3 months ahead. And some people will start calling to make sure they're on the calendar. You know, they'll call in the spring for fall work. So the earlier the better. But there's times, I just had a guy call me this week that wanted to had a schedule for people doing some work on his farm in early November. And it just so happened that we worked out the right dates, worked, and we got him in for us for the end of October. And so that was a last minute thing that happened to work out, but it's not something you would want to do if you were trying to schedule up your entire breeding program. You know,
definitely here. And then, so obviously with these, there's certain protocols as well that you have to make sure in order to get them to super ovulate or come into heat at the right time for the lap AIs. Do you, as Transova Genetics, do you provide the protocols in place for each of these procedures, or do I need to talk to my local veterinarian, or what does that look like?
So we would provide you with the entire protocol and work with you through that protocol, you know, what you needed to do when, and we can also help you out with, you can get the drugs from your local vet or get them through Valley Vet or, you know, any kind of Pipestone Vet, any kind of company like that. Or we can help you by supplying those drugs for you as well. And so anything that we do is going to involve a cedar, most times estromate or luteolice, sometimes a GnRH product, but not very often. And then faltropin for the stimulating hormone. And then for recipients and lap AIs, we'll use PG600. And we can supply all of those to you and help you with that.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great, because I know when we did our lap AI, the veterinarian we work with, they provided the procedure and then told us what we needed to have, as well as my fiance now told me what, you know, drugs I needed to have on hand, and that was great. But it's something that's a little daunting if you don't know what's going on, and if you haven't necessarily done the process before.
Right.
So I think this is just a fascinating topic, and I think we could talk about this for another 2 hours. As we're trying to wrap up today, Stanton, is there anything that we haven't touched on that you think is really important for people to know as they're considering maybe taking the next step in using reproductive technology?
Something that I think education is important. And part of that education is just asking questions. And you don't have to plan on, don't, if you want to know something, just call and ask, or ask a friend, or ask somebody else in the industry, in the ET-IVF industry. You don't have to be planning to do 5 flushes next year in order for me to talk to you about what a flush is. I welcome people to call and ask questions, quiz me about things, quiz people in our company about things. Just ask questions, educate yourself. There's so many options out there, but it doesn't mean that you can't talk to us I'm going to talk to you whether you ever do business with me or not. I want to educate people about and help people better understand the embryo transfer and IVF world.
So there's no obligation.
No
obligation exactly. To buy. You can just talk to you.
And there's so much, because it may, something like a posthumous collection of semen may come in handy for you in 7 years. But unless you knew about it and heard about it, you're not going to even know it's a possibility 7 years from now. And so educating yourself is important, and just knowing what's out there. And you may be able to help somebody else down the road with something if you know about what an opportunity or what could happen.
Yes, that's great. Stan, where can we find some more information, either about Transova Genetics or yourself, and then find your contact information if we have people interested?
I think very basically just transova.com, and you can generally anything that if you say you hit the contact us button, it's going to eventually come to me if it's about small rumen at work. You know, just get on that website. Laura, you know, if you get on the Goat Gab Facebook page and get to Laura can share my number or anybody's number within our company and try to get you in contact. But transova.com would be
absolutely
a good start.
And I will say that those people at Transova Genetics, especially in that small ruminant location that I've had the opportunity to meet and work with, are phenomenal people. They have incredible brains and truly on the pulse of the industry when it comes to reproductive technologies.
And they're nice people.
Let's
too.
Not forget that. They are very nice.
Cameron, you want to talk about what we're going to do next week?
Yes, absolutely. So next week, we are going to be talking about, we're going to switch gears here and talk about goat shows and what it takes to plan a great goat show. We're going to be talking about some of our experience with great goat shows, some experiences with less than stellar goat shows, and we're going to try not to say names of these goat shows as well.
Many clubs might be planning their spring and summer shows now, so we'd like to give you some things to think about as you're trying to put together a show. We're just going to keep our fingers crossed that 2021 is going to work out for shows next year. So, I hope it inspires a little bit of excitement. And as always, if you have any thoughts that you'd like to share, ideas of things that we might not think about to discuss in planning those stellar shows, please get a hold of us through our Goat Gab page on Facebook, or you can email either Stan or either Cameron or myself at any time. We'd
absolutely
love to hear from
don't
you.
Forget to like, rate, subscribe, review. Again, we're on iTunes and Spotify and Anchor.com for our Goat Gab podcast. And if you have any questions at all, just let us know. We love hearing from you guys as listeners. Too. And we've had a lot of great submissions as well throughout just the 4 weeks we've been doing this.
Well, have a great week, Cameron. And thank you, Stanton, so much for gracing us with your presence today and being part of our podcast.
Thank you, Stanton.
Thank you very much, Cameron, Laura.
Yep.
Thank you.